World War III update. The chaos of the Anthropocene continues unfettered. Another country descends into civil war. This looks like a scene out of the movie Civil War, only it's not in the United States yet. This is in Venezuela. And today in the streets of Caracas, there are gunshots ringing out on every other corner as the country descends into civil war, as many people within that country are contesting the election results. Essentially, the gist of it is you have your Western-backed leader who the transnational corporations are hoping can get into power so that they can go in there and exploit all the resource wealth of Venezuela, which is one of the most resource-rich countries on earth on the cheap, including oil. And then you have Maduro, who is endorsed by Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, the Iranian regime, as well as many other Eastern-leaning, BRICS-leaning countries. So the dividing line between East and West has now been firmly drawn in the Southern Hemisphere, in South America as well. And what is happening here is very interesting, because let's think about this for a second. You have the world's largest oil producers embroiled in some sort of conflict, either domestic or some foreign entanglement. In the United States, for example, you have questions about pending civil unrest. If we do have another contested election, which of course we will. United States, the largest producer of oil in the world. You have Saudi Arabia, who is adjacent to Yemen, who, if they do partake in the conflict that is about to ensue in the Middle East, the Houthis have threatened to attack their oil infrastructure. You have Iran, one of the largest producers of oil in the world, or could be one of the largest producers of oil in the world, on the brink of war. You have Russia, who is having refineries attacked on a daily basis, and now you have Venezuela, okay? Arguably one of the jewels of South America in terms of its oil wealth, albeit not without a cost. It's a thicker crude, so that means that it requires more inputs in order to process. Regardless, the oil is there. You have all of these countries in some state of conflict, yet you have oil cratering in real terms, probably cheaper, arguably, than it's ever been when you really think about it. Now, the question is why? What sort of pending event could cause the price of oil to flatline? We've all been looking at this the wrong way. We've all been thinking to ourselves, well, if an oil war flares up in the Middle East, everything is going to go through the roof. That presumes the global trade is going to continue thereafter. What if global trade doesn't continue thereafter? Let's remember what happened during COVID, when the world essentially stopped. What happened to the price of oil? It went negative, okay? During these global crises, you can see the potential for the price of oil to go negative if there is no trade. Now, if there is a world war, is there going to be trade? That is the question. Are they pricing in a world war? Okay, because when we think, okay, they're pricing in a world war, the price of oil should skyrocket. Should it not? Should oil not be more expensive? Yes and no. It depends on what the demand is on the other side of that equation. If it's a situation where countries are just not trading with one another in dollar terms, of course, because the petrodollar may not be a thing if that type of war of that magnitude actually ensues, then is there going to be as much of a demand if we are in a state of war? And if every place is in martial law and nobody is shopping for the latest and greatest of anything, is this what they're pricing in? I don't buy this whole idea that they're pricing in some sort of depression in the oil markets, yet at the same time, you are seeing the prices of the stock market and the S&P 500 rising like crazy. These two things just don't make sense. And if we're of the belief that Wall Street is behind the commodities market as much as they corner the stock market, then you would think that those two things would line up. Right now, the stock market is telling us that everything is great. Yet you look at the oil market, and that's saying maybe everything is not so great. Then you see the price of gold, which is through the roof. So this is telling us, okay, price of gold high, price of oil very low, stock market high. To me, if you were expecting some sort of depression, okay, you would expect that those stock market valuations would be low, barring a market melt-up, which would be, you know, hyperinflationary, right? You would expect that you would have low stock valuations. We don't see that. What do we see? And you'd expect that there would be a corresponding high oil price because demand would be expected to be much higher. But if you were expecting total worldwide chaos, you would see the stock market up because people are still in mania mode, right? And possible melt-up hyperinflation on the horizon. You'd see the price of oil cratering because this would be factoring in a collapse in trade, at least between East and West, okay? And likely, you're not going to be producing all of the non-essential goods that really drive that price of oil upwards. What you're going to be producing is armaments. You're going to be producing essential commodities, metals, and food, and things that you inputs into your agricultural system and your industry that you're going to need to fuel the war machine. So those things are not necessarily bullish for oil. So I'm really trying to think of this from a macro geopolitical point of view, because at this point in time, the chaos, if you're trying to factor in every single little thing that is going on in each one of these countries, it's just going to be like a game of whack-a-mole, and it's going to drive you completely nuts. I think what's happening in Venezuela right now is that you have the transnational, transatlanteans, if you will, in the West, trying to install their puppet government in the place of Maduro, who is not well-liked in the country. And I'm not saying that they're good and they're free of corruption or anything like that. All I'm saying is that you have the gangster running the country who is trying to fight off the even bigger international monetary fund gangsters who are trying to get that country in lockdown due to its resource wealth. And the people there are upset because, of course, you know, with sanctions being imposed on Venezuela, making it very difficult for that country to mature economically relative to other countries and its competitor countries. And I mean, Argentina is really no different in this respect. So to have that guy, Milei, you know, chastising Maduro on social media for his country descending into total chaos, I mean, he's one to talk, right? Granted, he is now the wonder boy of South America. But anyways, in order to really understand what's happening here, I think what is happening is we are heading into a world war. That's the only rational explanation there is for the price of oil being so low, despite an impending conflict in the Middle East. And that is exactly what is about to happen. Now, however, the plans have been somewhat postponed because Israel is descending into a chaos of its own. Israel has all sorts of domestic political issues. Everybody there is fighting about something, okay? It is just, you know, for them to try to wage a war on seven fronts when they can't get their own house in order. I don't want to say the word because the video will be flagged, but it's an exercise in self-deletion. Right now, you have right-wing mobs attempting to overthrow military bases, okay, not because they want to stop the war, okay, not because they want to, you know, call for a ceasefire and bring in a peace deal. No. They are against the prosecution of Israeli soldiers who were convicted of, I believe, I can't say the word, but we'll just say rape and assault and possible murder of Palestinian prisoners, torture and murder of Palestinian prisoners. Okay, they're protesting those guys being in jail. So they want them released. So if anything, these are the guys who want to go to all-out war, Samson option on everybody in the region. So really, this is a battle between the hawks and the even more hawkish of hawks. So all this is a temporary speed bump. And this, what this does, actually, it allows the United States to continue to vacate its civilian population, as well as all of the NATO countries that are calling for the evacuation of Lebanon. The United States has still stopped short of declaring a level 4 travel advisory, which is interesting because they're still calling it a level 3 reconsider travel. Now, I was talking to a friend about this, and they suspect that the reason why they're doing this, well, I mean, I suspected that it's because they don't want to signal to Hezbollah that war is imminent, because if they do that, then basically that's the United States capitulating to the demands of the Israelis. The Israelis want to bring the U.S. into a war. Okay, let's just get that straight right from the get-go. The Israelis cannot win this war by themselves. They have to find some way to bring the United States in. The United States will go to war for Israel if it comes down to it. The Israelis know this, but behind the scenes, allegedly, they are trying to get the Israelis to postpone this because they are not ready. Maybe it's due to the election. Whatever the case, they don't want it to happen yet. So they want the Israeli response to the attack in the occupied Golan Heights against Syrians who don't identify Israelis and the Lebanese who contest it as being a hit by an IDF interceptor. So, I mean, it's confusing. So if you take the Lebanese point of view, what happened was an IDF interceptor hit an occupied part of the Golan Heights, hit Syrians, not Israelis. Okay, in fact, there's video footage showing a high-ranking Israeli official being rejected from the region because they don't even like the Israelis in that region. So Israel is trying to use this as their casus belli to go to war. Okay, so essentially what is happening here is the U.S. is saying, wait, slow down, we don't want this to go to all-out war, so your response has to be measured. However, many sources are indicating that there's an 80% likelihood that the response that the Israelis take is going to trigger a greater region-wide war. So according to Israel's Channel 14, their assessment is that Israel's response to the Majdal Sham's attack, I'd probably mispronounce that, Majdal Sham's attack will likely lead to war with Hezbollah. And senior U.S. officials are trying to dissuade Israel from taking any sort of action which will provoke a region-wide war. Now, because the U.S. hasn't put in a level 4 travel advisory yet, they put in a level 4 advisory into countries where it's already in a full-blown state of war. The suspicion is that maybe they're not doing this because they want their people to be able to continue to move around undeterred. If they were to put in this level 4 travel advisory, not only would that be a catalyst to the conflict itself, because this would compel Hezbollah to preempt Israel's attack. I mean, think about it. If the United States declares level 4, everybody get out of the country immediately, Hezbollah is going to say, okay, we know an attack is imminent, we should preempt that attack. So this, in a way, is trying to allow Israel to maintain the initiative by not declaring a level 4. Because as soon as the United States turns that square to red, which is what they do on the State Department travel advisory map, any country you shouldn't go to turns to red. As soon as they do that, that means war is imminent. Okay, and I don't think they're going to do that now until you have the war actually start, until Israel initiates a response. And perhaps this could be political as well. There could be concerns that if they do issue a travel at war for advisory before the Israelis attack, then that is going to somehow lend credence to the Lebanese point of view, in that they are the ones that are being aggressed against. But essentially, that's what's happening. We are going to see an Israeli response. It's very likely going to be harsh, as they say. However, I don't think it's still going to be calculated and targeted whereas it may not lead to an immediate outbreak of hostilities. Indeed, Hezbollah will have to respond in kind. Everything is being primed. The Israeli hospitals in the north are being primed. They're accepting volunteers. Hezbollah has went underground in the vast, cavernous and endless labyrinthian circuit of tunnels that exists under there, which make the Hamas tunnel system look like kindergarten. This is going to be a war unlike any other. And then, of course, you have the issue of all of the access of resistance countries who are going to be meeting with the incumbent president of Iran. So he is going to be meeting in a virtual meeting with Hezbollah, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, Syrian resistance groups, paramilitaries from Iraq, and the Houthis. So you are potentially going to see, and this is Iran telegraphing, that they're getting ready to coordinate all of their assets in the region. The purpose of having or announcing that they're going to be having this virtual meeting is for the purpose of the Israelis and the United States to take notice that they could, if they wanted to, coordinate all of these attacks in a very strategic way. And in doing so, of course, that would easily overwhelm the Iron Dome. And in fact, it could potentially bring the whole region into a conflict. Even those countries, those oil-producing countries that are not directly involved, they too could be target, maybe not militarily, but their critical infrastructure, their oil infrastructure, will be targeted by Iran's proxies if they partake in any way, shape, or form. So right now, you have some interesting things developing. Here's exactly, if you want to know what's going on, this is the map. So this is Israel down here. This is Lebanon, okay? Israel has called for Hezbollah to move beyond the Litani River because, according to some people, according to Israel, they claim that Lebanon is shelling, and if they can get them behind this river, it creates kind of a demilitarized zone, and then, you know, they don't have to worry about having their northern territories, some of them occupied, of course, shelled. Hezbollah has not agreed to this at all. In fact, one of the Lebanese foreign ministers, and if you don't know anything about this region, and I'm by no means an expert, the Lebanese government is different from Hezbollah. So the Lebanese government, there's actually a U.S. embassy there. Okay, they have amicable relations with the West, more or less, but they really don't control things militarily. So the Lebanese foreign minister has said that Hezbollah is willing to give up this territory. And that, in fact, was taken back and retracted as fake news. Because, of course, Hezbollah will never give up this territory, especially the river that some people claim Israel wants for its own use, because this is a very water-scarce region. Israel is not a huge producer of energy, so it's not like they can just desalinate a limitless amount of water without cost. So the Lebanese foreign minister is claiming that the response from the Israelis is going to be limited and is not going to trigger a region-wide war. But it all essentially boils down to this. So ultimately, when you have the Israeli forces mobilizing in the north, they're getting ready to try to take this territory. Now, God only knows how many tunnels are underneath this territory. I mean, this is a territory that is much bigger than the Gaza Strip. I mean, and this is, of course, just the tip of Lebanon. And, of course, the Lebanese paramilitary groups are far more advanced and more organized and have more sophisticated technology, which will definitely, although not peer-to-peer, and although they don't have the high technology that the Israelis have been given from the Americans, they still are going to put up a much bigger fight. And then, of course, you have all the proxies within the region that will be concurrently activated and synchronize their attacks against Israel, which will likely overwhelm the system, which, of course, will bring the United States into the war. And that, of course, is going to lead to a much bigger world war for reasons that we'll try to connect the dots in just a moment. So right now, the U.S. has warships in the region. They have the Wasp Amphibious Ready Group, which is stationed in the Mediterranean. I don't have that one in a picture here, but essentially what an amphibious group is, it consists of, I think, 5,000 Marines. So that's 5,000 troops who are ready to help on the ground if need be. In addition to that, they have the Theodore Roosevelt and the Strike Carrier Group 9, I believe it's referred to as, in the Persian Gulf. Okay, and so this is Iran. This is where the U.S. military with their Strike Carrier Group 9 is currently located. This is the Strait of Hormuz. People always are talking about, well, the Strait of Hormuz could potentially be closed in the case of a conflict, which would restrict global oil supply and trading by about 20%. This is expected to increase the price of oil immensely, far more than just 20%. But the question is, if the rest of the world is in flames and, you know, China goes after Taiwan and Russia goes further and something breaks out in the Baltics for reasons we're going to get into in just a moment, and these wars flare up all around the world and global trade grinds to a halt, well, a lot of this oil, I believe, is being used, and I say believe because it just makes sense. A lot of the oil is being used to produce goods that are really vanity purchases. These are things that the West has come to enjoy in times of decadence, but in a shitty economy where there's martial law and there's a world war, ain't nobody going to be doing that sort of discretionary spending. There's not going to be disposable income. So yes, in some ways, the people who say, well, oil price is low because they're expecting a depression, it's true. But why are they expecting a depression? Well, it's because there's going to be a world war and nobody's going to be trading with each other. Just a theory for your consideration. I'm going to be honest, I just thought about that at the time of making this video. So sometimes I think I just do these videos to help organize my thoughts, because it's not until I really do the presentations that it really starts to all make sense to me. So this is, I believe she is the Lebanese embassy representative or something. What is her title here? U.S. Embassy, I don't know. She's just some spokesperson for the U.S. Embassy. Basically, she's saying here that if you don't leave the U.S. or the Lebanon now, or if you can't avoid it, you potentially will be stuck there for 6 months or more. And you will be stuck there for an indefinite period of time. But you should be prepared to shelter in place. This is a very strange sort of message, which seeks to be somewhat reassuring. And she's got a lot of pearls on her neck. That is kind of a strange getup, isn't it? Anyways, it's about to go down. And now the UK is positioning their warships there as well, under the guise of evacuating their citizens. So this is a new interesting twist. You know, I always say there are no military exercises, only World War III disguises. Well, now we're getting into the realm of, we're just bringing our military here to evacuate people from the region, okay? That sort of chess maneuver. In terms of what's going on in Venezuela, like I said, it's a crazy situation. This is what Trump had to say not too long ago, and this should give you a sense of what is really going on with Venezuela, okay?
We would have taken it over. We would have gotten all that oil.
Yeah, let me see here. Let me see if I can get that volume up a little bit.
But now we're buying oil from Venezuela, so we're making...
This is important.
How about we're buying oil from Venezuela? When I left, Venezuela was ready to collapse. We would have taken it over. We would have gotten all that oil. It would have been right next door. But now we're buying oil from Venezuela, so we're making a dictator very rich. Can you believe this? Nobody can believe it. You know where the oil, you know, their oil is garbage. It's horrible. The worst you can get, tar. It's like tar. And to refine it, you need special plants.
And he's right. You do need special plants, and you need a lot of input chemicals. I believe, in fact, one of the inputs is light crude. You have to get light crude in order to make to process the heavy crude, which is why, you know, the Venezuela oil reserve quote, an estimate, is somewhat misleading because you need so much in order to process that. It's not just like they have 260 billion barrels of oil in the ground. Of course, we know that only 60% of stated reserves are actually able to be retrieved. So really, they got about 130, 150 billion barrels of oil, which can be retrieved. And in order to process all that, it requires a lot of energy, not only to extract it, but then to process it as well. So the net return on energy invested is much lower. But essentially, you know, he's saying that there's a lot of foreign meddling going on. And he unabashedly admits that that is happening, which is quite interesting that people are just okay with that, I guess. And it's no surprise then that the Maduro government is quite pissed. So here's what they're saying. So they are getting ready. So these three appear to be the main responsible. What is this again? This is, okay. The Attorney General of Venezuela has been directed by Socialist President Nicolas Maduro to begin a criminal prosecution of his political opponents. So they think that there's some sort of collusion with foreign governments, and they're getting ready to try to take them to court, utilizing some kind of lawfare. But I think that's this thing could quickly spiral out of control within the next 24 to 48 hours. We could see an actual military overflow, overthrow of the Maduro government, quite possibly. It's such a fluid situation. Maduro is blaming Elon Musk as spreading disinformation because, of course, when these events happen, the social media hysteria that ensues has the effect of rallying people up in the country even more. So Maduro is accusing Elon Musk of fomenting this unrest in his country. And to his credit, Elon Musk did tweet this out. He tweeted out that armed communist Maduro gangs, colectivos, are now storming polling stations. And they're showing this video, which appears to show a guy, you know, hoisting a box of, you know, a ballot box onto his shoulders. Well, it turns out that this was false, okay? That these thieves are stealing air conditioners, and a woman in the video can be heard saying, so, which doesn't necessarily speak to how good things are going economically in your country, but it's different than what Elon Musk was insinuating what it was. And that wasn't the only post that Musk made an error, that his own community note system, which I will say is a testament to the integrity of Community Notes, that it will even correct the owner of the company, who clearly has his own agenda. So there are several instances of this where this type of disinformation is being churned out at a rapid rate, and all of this is being seen by the people on the ground who are engaging in these gunfights in Caracas, being egged on by the West to go all the way to put this country into total chaos, okay? So that is what's going on right there right now. I can't show a lot of the videos because I'm sure you can go and find them because I don't want the video to get flagged. But they're cheering because there's scenes of Hugo Chavez statues being torn down. Now, remember, Hugo Chavez at his peak was, his popularity was as high as Vladimir Putin was in Russia in the 80s, okay? But then, of course, it started to dwindle towards the end of his leadership. But right now, they're toppling, there's several videos of them toppling Chavez statues. But remember what happened in Iraq, okay? And this is just a reminder, the toppling of Saddam and other statues, it's not without its share of chaos. And then, of course, there's the issue of if you do see Venezuela descend into chaos, then what is going to happen on the immigration front? Do you think that's going to be good for immigration? I don't think so. Now, I want to quickly, before I get into the Russia-Ukraine pending nuclear war, because it appears as though the guy who's predicted accurately the last seven elections believes that we're going to see
a Kamala Harris government. And this is a guy who predicted Trump in 2016. Remember, when not a lot of people predicted that. This is a guy who predicted Biden in 2020 when not a lot of people anticipated that. So he is predicting that there is a very high chance that Kamala Harris is going to win. And if that is the case, nuclear war is baked in Europe. Now, before I get into that, there's been a lot of shady stuff going on in Europe. We're talking about sabotage. Is this left-wing groups? Is it Islamic groups? Is it false flag attacks by the West on themselves? Is it the Russians? Is it the Chinese? Either way, Paris is under some type of coordinated attack. Because, of course, I reported on the blackout that happened just the other day during the Olympics, which is something that typically doesn't happen. It was only for like an hour and a half, and I think it was at night, so not a lot of people noticed, possibly. But regardless, that's pretty major. You have the rail systems that have been attacked, which, of course, has caused a lot of detriment to their transportation system. Now they have fiber optic networks that were sabotaged in six parts of France, targeting the French telecommunications sector. So you have all these coordinated attacks. You have the Germany BASF plant, which is the largest plant, and I believe it's the largest company in Germany. They had an explosion at one of their facilities. German police also announced that the railway line between Bremen and Hamburg has been sabotaged. In Finland, there were attackers who toppled a 50-meter-high telecom tower. So, of course, Finland, very proximate to Russia, and with all of the mobilization of force inside Finland, the preparation to accept U.S. nuclear weapons and yada, 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 you know, obviously the Russians have a vested interest in sowing some kind of chaos in that region as well. So we're seeing lots of these acts of sabotage start to ensue. So are we starting to see the waking up of sleeper cells? And how long before we start to see this unfold in the United States is the question. Now, right now, what is happening? People are thinking that things are quite quiet in Ukraine. Right now, the Ukrainian lines are collapsing. The Russians are about to advance into a region that the Ukrainians obviously occupy, but is a primary transport corridor for Ukraine's military initiatives. And once they do that, we could see a very rapid collapse of, I'm not going to get into the details of this, and quite frankly, as a generalist, I don't tend to focus on the tactical minutia, but essentially, Ukraine is on the back foot. A lot of people have not looked at the Black Sea lately because since that alleged shootdown of a NATO drone, and this is why you have to watch all of my videos because I can't constantly possibly reiterate every little thing, otherwise we'll never get through this within an hour. Basically, you haven't seen NATO recon planes in that region for a minute. And a lot of people are suspecting that, okay, maybe things have died down a little bit. But what you come to find is that these same reconnaissance planes, these Boeing RC-135 rivet joints, and these Northrop Grumman RQ-4B Global Hawks that were in the Black Sea, and there still is manned reconnaissance missions in the Black Sea. That's what the UK is doing now, trying to tempt the Russians into shooting them down. But you're starting to see a lot more activity near the Baltic. Now, a lot of people would say, well, this is de-escalatory. But I thought about it for a second. And what you have right now is Ukraine continuing to target deep inside Russia. Get a load of this. This is the Olyna Air Base. Look how far that is. Ukraine, Kiev is all the way down here. Moscow is what? Is it 600 kilometers? I mean, they were going to St. Petersburg before, which is right around here, I believe. And to go all the way to here is incredible. You know, to have that kind of range for a drone strike is incredible, which means one or two things. It means that either they have advanced drone technology, Or they're shooting them from maybe in the Baltic Sea somewhere. I think that is probably a realistic estimation. And what's happening right now is you're seeing this increased amount of NATO reconnaissance activity. Now, they're not just targeting any old oil refineries or anything like that. They are actually targeting strategic bombers, nuclear-capable bombers. They claim to have successfully targeted a strategic bomber in Olyenia Air Base. Okay, and remember, Finland, Sweden have now granted the U.S. military access to most of their bases. They have their F-35s put in the bunkers. They're getting the nuclear weapons soon, regardless of what anybody says. That's what's going to happen. And, of course, there's troops along the border, and the border between Finland and Russia has been closed for some time. So you're seeing Finland acts of sabotage inside that country, and now Russia's nuclear triad being attacked at Olyenia Air Base, and they're blaming it on the Ukrainians, or the Ukrainians, stupidly, are taking credit for this. I don't know why you'd want to take credit. I mean, I guess they have to, right? Otherwise, the Russians would try to blame NATO, and then we'd be in imminent World War III. But essentially, this is escalatory, because instead of, you know, focusing on Crimea now, they've said, okay, we're actually going to escalate. We now have look at this. So this is the flight path of the Rivenoid. This is around Finland. So this is around this region here. So this Olyenia Air Base, okay, that's where that Rivenoid was flying. And then that base was targeting one of their nuclear-capable bombers, okay? So you can't tell me that's a coincidence. And then, of course, here in, I believe this is Latvia, you have this RQ-4B Global Hawk doing its thing. So why? What purpose would that possibly serve? So the Russians have to be thinking that this is escalatory. The Russians are under no illusions about Trump. They've made that abundantly clear that they think that Trump is going to be no different than Biden when it comes to trying to broker some sort of peace deal. Because essentially what's going to happen is Trump is going to say, okay, you guys can, Ukraine, you're going to give up Crimea, and Russia is going to try to, in this, I don't know how they're going to do this. Maybe they're going to say, okay, the rest of Ukraine can go into NATO. Either way, none of them, Russia is not going to give up its annexed territories, and Ukraine is not going to accept that. So what that means is escalation. And I think if Kamala Harris gets in, then, you know, it's definite escalation. The asymmetrical attacks don't end there. You also have Ukraine hacking banking systems across Russia. The banks in Russia aren't doing that great either. They got, I think it's like 18%, not interest rates. Interest rates are 18% there. I don't know what their inflation rate is. But they're aggressively trying to tackle inflation, unlike here, where, you know, we're really worried about the banks failing, so we can't do that. But these hacks have caused outages in personal offices, barred payments for public transport, interruptions to the Russian mobile and internet providers, attack popular online messengers and the Russians' social networks, and gain access to major banks' databases. We also have a Russian embassy in Chisinau, the capital of Moldova, attacked as well today. That is this video here. It just shows smoke emanating from the building. Doesn't really provide any details. A lady there walking with her purse like it's just another day. Maybe it was firebombed. Who knows? And that's only one other front. We still have to talk about, and of course, that accounting error that was made the other day. Now the U.S. is going to be sending another $1.7 billion, with a B, in weapons to Ukraine. So it ain't slowing down. South Korea is warning that North Korea will do a nuclear weapons test right before or immediately after the upcoming presidential election to raise its leverage against the U.S. I told you recently that there have been reports of earthquakes around sites in North Korea known to be doing underground nuclear testing, so it's inconclusive as to whether or not that's what they're doing, and the West isn't drawing a whole lot of attention to it, probably because they don't want to spook the markets. But according to a South Korean defense minister, we cannot rule out the possibility that the decisive moment being right before or after the U.S. presidential election to raise the leverage against the U.S. is when the North Koreans are going to do a nuclear test. And Japan continues its talks with Washington to partake in what's called extended deterrence, i.e. the hosting of nuclear weapons beyond a nuclear umbrella and actually being a host of U.S. nuclear predictions. Now, the Kamala prediction. This guy named Alan Lichtman has allegedly predicted the last 7 elections ever since he started this. And he has these things called Lichtman's keys. And he says that most of these boxes have been checked. He says if 6 or more of these boxes are not checked, then the candidate will not be the victor. Okay? So he is saying that Kamala checks something like 10 of these boxes. Okay? And barring some major scandal, civil unrest, third party, you know, RFK, something else, some other black swan, she's very likely to be elected. Now, I know you're probably saying, well, this guy is just a mainstream media shill, and you're probably right, but he did predict that Trump was going to be the president in 2016, and you can bet that nobody really believed him then. Okay, and the fact that he's predicted this since 1984 means that there were numerous Republicans that he predicted were going to be president as well throughout that period of time. So what this means is that it appears as though not only are you going to get your Middle East war, but you're also going to see a continuation of the conflict with Russia escalating to the brink. Right now, still very smoky where I'm at. This is the wildfire map. Right now, the fires have calmed down a little bit, but we are going to be having another heat dome descend upon us within about a week's time. And when that happens, of course, the fires are going to flare up once again. So we're seeing crazy, crazy temperatures around the world. Right now, the estimates are that the hottest day ever for the last several days or weeks in a row. So it's a thing, whether people want to admit it or not. CNN, interestingly, is reporting that Iran is using covert influence to try to undermine the Trump candidacy, and at the same time saying that the Russians are trying to pump up the Trump prospect of being president. So, some conflicting things going on here. Either way, I mean, this is what's happening. This is what we're going to see probably everywhere very soon. Just a descent into chaos. And, everybody is going to be scapegoating and pointing the blame at, pick your poison. But at the end of the day, we as preppers, we just got to ride it out. And it's just one chaotic event after another. That's my grand thesis for why oil prices are cratering right now. That's the only thing I can think, is that we're about to see another COVID-like situation or a crisis on that scale that is going to bring trade for non-essential goods to a halt. And it's going to arise from all this chaos that we see before us here. That's the only thing I can think of. Despite oilprice.com coming out today with an article that suggests that oil production has already peaked, and they give a variety of different bearish cases bull cases for the price of oil. So it's an interesting article. I'd encourage you to go and check it out. So we should be seeing the price of oil with all of these things I've talked about go up. But I think we may be conceptualizing it in the wrong way. That's the report I have for you guys today. I'm just getting my footing back here in the studio once again. So I hope to start doing this on a more consistent basis, fine-tune everything, get the cameras all dialed in again. I hope you found something of value out of this long-winded daily update. Let me know in the comment section below if you agree with what I say. Maybe you don't. I want to hear from you. Thanks for watching, guys. Take care. And if you want to support the channel, the best way, CanadianPreparedness.com, to get all of your prepping items before global trade collapses. Thanks for watching, guys. Take care.